This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is AM 580 News Daily Podcast for June 27th. I'm Michael Kuliska. Coming up, a survivor story, a modern ark escaping the floods in the Midwest, animal rescues along the Mississippi River, and AM 580 meteorologist Scott Althoff will check the forecast. But first, a look at today's news. Chicago appears to be the next battlefield in the war over handgun control. Pro-gun groups filed a federal lawsuit yesterday challenging a long-standing Chicago handgun ban only hours after the U.S. Supreme Court decision to strike down a similar ban in the District of Columbia. The lawsuit names the City of Chicago and Mayor Richard M. Daley as defendants. Daley has long been an outspoken opponent of handgun ownership in the city. Four of the plaintiffs are Chicago residents who legally own handguns but say they currently keep them outside the city limits. They were joined as plaintiffs by the Bellevue, Washington-based Second Amendment Foundation and the Illinois State Rifle Association based in Chatsworth. A spokeswoman for the City of Chicago's law department, Jenny Hoyle, said Chicago's ready to defend its ban all the way to the Supreme Court. Newly unsealed documents say federal investigators looking into allegations of pay-to-play politics in Governor Rod Blagojevich's administration interviewed the governor on a number of occasions. Attorneys for political fundraiser Tony Resco said in documents that in the interviews Blagojevich told authorities he did not make incriminating remarks to two government witnesses who testified at Resco's trial. The documents were unsealed yesterday by U.S. District Judge Amy St. Eve, who presided over the trial at which Resco was convicted of fraud and other offenses. Blagojevich has not been charged with any wrongdoing and has repeatedly denied trading state contracts and jobs for campaign contributions. Will he close it or not? That's the question surrounding Governor Rod Blagojevich and his plans for the state prison at Pontiac. The governor said last month he wanted to close the maximum security prison and transfer its inmates to a new facility north of the Quad Cities, but the prison closure didn't show up on the governor's list of proposed budget spending cuts on Tuesday. And on Wednesday, a state corrections spokesman said there were no plans to close Pontiac at this time. When asked about the Pontiac prison in Chicago, Blagojevich said he hoped it could stay open.
It's up to the House Democrats and Mike Madigan to restore funding so we can afford things like Pontiac. They have to pass funding so we can restore it or pass the jobs program. And Senator Rutherford, I think, very much is going to, I hope, work to pass the jobs program because that'll generate $600 million so we don't have to do anything like that.
The statement clears up nothing, according to State Senator Dan Rutherford of Pontiac. Rutherford says the prison shouldn't be among the items that might be cut from the state budget because prisons are a core state responsibility, not a new spending proposal. But if the governor plans to keep Pontiac open, Rutherford says he should send a letter to the Illinois Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, telling them that he's changed his mind. Rutherford has sent his own letter to Governor Blagojevich, requesting clarification. When disagreements left Illinois without a budget for several months last year, state employees still got their paychecks. But Illinois' comptroller warns that may not happen if the same scenario occurs again this year. Illinois' new fiscal year begins July 1st, and as of now, the state has no budget, Amanda Winicky explains.
Comptroller Dan Hines says last year's fix was made possible because of a court order, but he says that was a last-minute, unorthodox, one-year deal. Hines says this year he predicts the courts won't grant that protection if Illinois does not have a new budget in place by Tuesday. Hines says the first round of payroll is set to go out July 10th, making that a key deadline for the state to have a budget in place. The comptroller says it's the governor and legislative leaders' responsibility to come to an agreement.
We are now in a game of chicken. We are now basically in a staring contest to see who blinks first. And, you know, the ones who are going to get hurt in this contest are tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of vulnerable, innocent people.
Hines didn't recommend any one approach for the budget. I'm Amanda Winicky.
Thousands more people in Illinois are out of work, part of an unusually high jump in this state's unemployment rate. That's causing both worried and puzzled reaction from experts and businesses. Illinois' unemployment rate jumped from 5.4% in April to 6.4% in May. American Airlines is cutting about 12% of its flights to and from Chicago's O'Hare Airport. It's scaling back service nationwide. Spokeswoman Mary Frances Fagan says rising fuel costs left the company no alternative, and she says more cuts can't be ruled out.
The airline industry, as are some other industries, is in so much flux right now because of these skyrocketing oil prices. It's impossible to predict anything with certainty.
American is completely eliminating service from Chicago to Albany, New York, Providence, Rhode Island, and Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. The service reductions will be made by November. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has approved a controversial air permit application by oil giant BP for its Whiting refinery in northwest Indiana. Michael Puente reports.
The EPA's approval allows BP to continue construction on its near $4 billion expansion project. The approval dismays environmental groups who contend BP isn't doing enough to safeguard air quality. But BP spokesman Scott Dean says pollution emissions have decreased by 68% since 2001. He says that trend will continue when the project is completed in 3 years.
We want to be part of the solution when it comes to reducing the emissions while producing energy that people need.
Pamela Blakely, head of the EPA's air permit section, says BP addressed all of the agency's concerns in its air permit application. I'm Michael Puente.
For the latest newscast online, go to will.uiuc.edu/news. This is AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Michael Kuliska. As the story goes, Noah was told to build a giant ark to survive a great flood. Animals and birds were let on board, two by two, so they could be safe until the water receded. Today's flooding is minimal compared to what Noah is said to have faced in the story. That being said, the rising water has led to animal rescues in western Illinois, Iowa, and Missouri, and at least one ark floating along the Mississippi River. Jason Parrott reports.
Jan Morse of Pontusic knows that with hot and muggy weather ahead, Nikki is going to appreciate this haircut.
I watch him do sheep all the time. They're just like, and I'm thinking, why can't we have something like that? These dogs have been done a long time ago. I've been working at this for a couple hours. I haven't got one totally done yet.
The fact that Morse has somewhere to give Nikki, Jamoki, Boo, Cherokee, Pride, Max, and Annie their haircuts is all that she really cares about. When the floodwater started to overtake her home in Pontusic, Morris says the evacuation process began.
We looked like Noah's Ark trying to get out of there.
Morris and her roommate loaded a small boat with their rabbits, geckos, ferrets, fish, and guinea pigs before bringing their six dogs on board.
We had the dogs put their life jackets on them so that if they fell out, nothing would happen. So when we got in there, we knew that we had a hard time just rowing, let alone trying to watch these guys as they jumped out the side, which is what we figured they were going to do. So here we all were. We had all the cages, and some of them were still in cages, and the whole thing was just full of animals.
With some help from neighbors, Morris's ark made it to dry land. At that point, she and her roommate headed to Fort Madison to drop their dogs off at their temporary home.
Get them on antibiotics. Got any amoxicillin drops?
Yes, I think
that's Dana Mueller, the president of PAW, Fort Madison's no-kill pet shelter. When the Mississippi River started to swell, she told the volunteers at the shelter to get ready for more animals.
The Department of Ag did call us to see if we could house any, and we said we would double up our population. And in the first week, then, we got approximately 18 dogs.
Along with housing the extra dogs, Mueller says PAW has been working to get pet food to owners impacted by the flood. She says Purina sent more than 20,000 pounds of dog and cat food to the shelter to be distributed throughout the tri-state region. Mueller says one volunteer even stopped in to take food to one of Iowa's hardest-hit communities, Oakville.
You know, it's getting up there, and we told her, we've got cat litter, so she took cat litter with her. We got extra food bowls, you know, because these people have nothing now, you know, absolutely nothing. So whatever we can do pet-related, you know, we want to help.
The food delivery is not the only way animals from Louisa County are getting help from Lee County. Lori Wardlow of Montrose is a veterinary technician. She's been helping at the Animal Protection League's temporary shelter in Donelson.
We'd bring them all here. We'd get the paperwork filled out, take them inside the arena, get them marked with an ID number, take their photograph, give them their vaccinations. And then once we got all that done, we'd take them back to the kennel, which is in the back, and we would put them in their own separate cages. The ones that come in together, we could put them together.
Wardlow says more than 50 animals will remain housed in several buildings at the Lee County Fairgrounds through Independence Day weekend. After that, the pets will be moved so the Lee County Fair can get underway. Wardlow says most of the dogs and cats are from communities such as Oakville and Mediapolis. She says some owners dropped off their pets before the water came. Others at the shelter are strays or abandoned dogs or cats that had to be rescued.
Usually we get a call. We have an emergency number set up here in the office. And the ones that had to leave them behind, they would call us or someone up in their area and say, I have my pet still in the building. I need to get them out. So we would send in the rescue group. We had a Code 3 water rescue that was here for 3 days. And they would go into the houses and get the pets and bring them here.
Bob Root is one of the volunteers working to save the animals trapped in flood water. He says it was a no-brainer for him to pick up his equipment and leave the animal rescue center he operates in Annapolis, Maryland, to come to southeast Iowa.
For myself and most of the others, just because we like animals and just can't stand to think about them, you know, slowly dying in a flooded area or suffering, so want to come out and try to, you know, bring out as many as we can and, you know, bring them to safety and get them back to the people they belong to.
Some of the other states represented at the Donelson shelter include Colorado and Pennsylvania. Rude says his most difficult rescue so far involved several pigs in Oakville.
Three people herded into a little corral we made out of snow fencing. And once they got in there, we shut the corral and then jumped the pigs and wrestled them to the ground. And that was about the simplest version of the story.
While a sense of sarcasm surrounded the impromptu ovation from Rude's fellow volunteers, pet owners throughout Iowa are still applauding efforts like his. Jan Morris is especially grateful to the folks at the Paw Shelter in Fort Madison.
There's no words I can tell you what it's like to have somebody just step up and say, yeah, we'll take them for you. We just cried, you know. You just cry. You just thank God that somebody was there that cared.
Morris is at the shelter as much as possible, checking on Nikki, Max, Boo, Cherokee Pride, Annie, and Jamoki. She does not know what will happen to her flooded home in Pontusic or when she will be able to take her dogs home. So for the time being, the six will remain at the shelter and Morris will continue giving summer haircuts. I'm Jason Parrott.
It's all right, Max. You'll be okay. Cutting your hair doesn't really hurt.
Flood levels are starting to recede for most communities, but there's also more rain on its way for east-central Illinois. Meteorologist Scott Althoff has a mix of clouds and sun, with periods of rain and thunderstorms in today's forecast for Champaign-Urbana and the area. Today, warm and humid with periods of rain and thunderstorms, especially this afternoon. The high, 90 degrees, the wind from the south at 8 to 16 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy, humid with periods of rain and thunderstorms. The low 68 degrees, the wind from the southwest at 6 to 12 miles per hour. Tomorrow, rain and thunderstorms likely in the morning, then becoming partly sunny, breezy and less humid in the afternoon. The high 83. The wind from the southwest at 6 to 12 miles per hour in the morning and then becoming westerly at 12 to 24 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tomorrow night, partly to mostly cloudy, the low near 60 degrees. Sunday, partly sunny, breezy, cooler and less humid with a slight chance of an afternoon shower or thunderstorm, the high near 75. Sunday night, partly cloudy, the low 58 degrees. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for June 27, 2008. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, will.uiuc.edu. I'm Michael Kuliska, AM 580 News.